Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And I didn't warn them when I was starting.
He didn't.
We are here with Joshua Lewis Smith.
This is all happening so fast. I'm good. I'm okay. I'm having a super weird week, mostly because I don't have a phone.
Yeah.
And I really committed to that by then. So I broke my phone. Because I'm clumsy. So basically, I broke my screen a while ago. I had an iPhone, and then I fixed my screen because I refused to pay any more money into like Apple fixing that screen.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So I fixed it. I got one of those kits and did it. It was really great. But then I dropped my phone again at the gym, and it fell. And then the phone was clearly on, but the screen was all black. And I was like, oh, that's not great. So I took it home and fixed it once more. And then it started turning off randomly, and then it started getting really hot, and then I tried to fix it, and now it's super dead. And so then I was like, well, I guess I've had an upgrade for a long time, I just haven't taken it. And then I realized, oh, the phone, I might as well wait for 2 weeks for the new phone to come out, right?
Yeah, is the 7 coming out soon?
No, the 7's already out. I am switching to an Android phone.
Wow.
I'm switching to the Samsung S8. And because I had thought about maybe getting a Galaxy, and then I saw, oh, well, it's not coming out for 2 weeks. I'm not going to just get... So then I just committed to not having a phone.
Wow.
And I have no phone.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's pretty terrible. Like, we were talking about it in one of the episodes this week, the episode we had in lieu of QIO.
Yeah.
We did a Maureen and I talking about recent events in a nondescript manner.
But I enjoyed it. It was cool.
My phone is the 5C, which is notoriously the worst phone of all time.
Dumpster fire of a phone.
Oh my god.
It's pretty bad. And I've gone through about 7 of them.
Oh my god.
Like, I really have. Because if you don't have a case on it, and for a long time I was like, you know, when I first got the fucking iPhone,
oh my god.
My first one was a 5C about 4 years ago, and I was a douchebag. And I was like, well, they designed the phone a certain way, so I'm not going to use a case with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I didn't have a case for a couple of years, and I went through about 3 during that period of time. Then I was like, fine, I'll get a case, and then I got, like, a small case.
Mm-hmm.
Went through 2 more, because those cases aren't real, they're just a waste of money. And then I finally got an OtterBox, and I've been okay since. But the 2 times that I lost it in between, I was phoneless for, like, 2 months.
Wow.
Because I was, like, in school, and so it wasn't that big of a deal because I was in school. So I had Wi-Fi all of the time.
Right.
But, yeah, no, I just didn't really talk to my family and, like, just did my own thing, which was both a blessing and...
not the best.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's super bizarre. And, of course, it's not like I'm disconnected. So I've been regularly temping right now, right? And I'm at a computer literally all day. It's not like I'm not being inundated with everything constantly. It just, instead of texting, me and my mom started emailing each other. It's just the commutes now.
Mm-hmm. That was the thing. I remember I had an iPad at least.
Yeah.
So like, that was something
I could... I know, because I'm not like... So I have a Kindle Fire tablet, and I put Spotify on it. It doesn't have data, right? But it has Wi-Fi. So when I'm... So I downloaded my music onto it, and it's like not that different, honestly.
Yeah
and I read more, I remember, which was great. And the only other thing that's kind of tricky and ends up being a good thing for you is you have to be really true to your word.
Mm-hmm.
You say, I'm going to be somewhere.
You have to be there.
You have to be there. And you can't be 10 minutes late, because if you're 10 minutes late, the 10 minutes late text doesn't exist when you're on your way to the place that you're going.
Yes, and that's fascinating. It's a fascinating way to live. And coming over here, for example, I was coming from a meeting that I wasn't sure how long it was going to be. And so, you know, on my way, I Facebook messaged you when I had Wi-Fi and just went, well, I hope they get it.
Yes.
And, you know, that's interesting, but plenty of people survived in the time before cell phones.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, too, you'd be surprised how much if you just showed up to a friend's house that they would let you in.
Yeah. Although, you know, I wouldn't, because I don't have a working buzzer, so I would have no way of knowing.
Right.
Yeah. I would never know.
I mean, the only risk that you run is the likelihood that your friend is not wearing pants.
Oh, yeah. No, because I not usually wearing that much clothing.
And you know what, Josh? When you got here, I was not wearing pants.
Yeah, true.
I was asleep, actually.
Yeah. He was, it's true.
I was, like, half asleep on the couch, and the only reason that I had pants on was that I was, like, there was just, like, a specter in my head, like, Josh is on his way. You should be wearing pants. And so I put pants on.
Yeah. Is everyone also tired all of the time? Well, is it just this week? I feel dead.
I'm living a bizarre life. So the temp job I have has two kinds of coffee on tap, which is great for me because I love iced coffee, right? Mm-hmm. So they have a cold brew and they have a nitro. Mm. So yes, I'm tired, but then I'm never tired because I'm just drinking a lot of caffeine all day.
Yeah. Well, nitro coffee is like jet fuel.
That stuff is insane. Yes, yeah. And then, you know, so you're so sleepy because you're sitting there doing data entry and it's fine. And the office is too cold because offices are never a comfortable temperature. Yeah. They just aren't. And then...
by trade.
Yeah. So then you get home and you're like, I'm so awake! And then it's like 11 p.m. and you have to get up at 6 and why are you still awake? But you're being so productive. Yeah.
See, I struggle with that life because I work in a coffee shop and actually, what's been nice, so as most of you know, I started this job at a coffee shop and I wasn't sure how the schedule was going to shake out, but what's cool is that basically they're just scheduling me for the same shifts every week.
That is nice.
It is, oh, it's so good.
Super consistent.
Although, I work on Saturdays at 9, and so your new schedule is that you work at 7 on Saturdays at 9, and I work at Hyde Park.
And I work in Bucktown. So it's a game
of me playing like, well, am I going to get up at 6, drive Maureen to work, and then take a nap in the car? Or am I going to get up at 7, get on a bus to a... no, get on a train to a bus.
Oh.
And like, hope that the bus is on time.
So, I mean, it's not ideal for Daniel by any stretch. And, I mean, I could, like, get up way early. The thing is, I have to be in Bucktown by 7. So, if I want to be in Bucktown by 7 on a Saturday, I would have to get on a bus at, like, 6. As opposed to being in my car by 6:40.
Right, and that's kind of hard. From this part of town, getting to the Blue Line areas isn't that straightforward.
It's really, well,
without a car.
What's nice about my commute is that my place is pretty much straight down Ashland.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so is there a bus that like does that?
There's an Ashland
bus. Oh, that's great.
It would be about a 45-minute bus ride.
Yeah.
Which isn't terrible.
Not very different than my commute, but...
Right. So it would be it would be a 10-minute walk to the Ashland bus.
Okay, okay.
And then, like, a 40-minute bus ride down, and then maybe, like, 3/4 mile walk down North Avenue.
Okay.
So, I mean...
So it's not the easiest thing.
It's not the easiest thing, and it would suck very early in the morning.
Yeah.
I
think that it would have been better this morning had it not also been Holy Week this week.
Yes. Yeah.
That's kind of the thing for me where, like, I just know that I'm not getting out of whatever the fuck until late tonight. Because Jesus died? Because, wait, Jesus was born?
Don't ask me, I'm Jewish. I have no clue.
Yeah.
I thought Jesus died on Friday.
Jesus
Kendrick
died.
Kendrick Lamar's dropping a new album on Sunday, hopefully.
Really?
Well, okay, so this is amazing. I'd love to talk about this. If anybody else follows Kendrick Lamar, I would be down to talk about this whenever if you want to write into the show. So, Kendrick Lamar released an album on Good Friday, right? And it's called Damn. And it's okay. Are you...
Huh?
Are you too?
I don't know.
It's not recording from your mic.
Hello. Remember how we were just... If you could hear it, we were just talking about how tired we were. And I'm...
Daniel forgot to hit a button. And so now you can hear us better. Hey, it's okay.
It's okay. No, we're giving the people what they want, and that's more Josh louder.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I think the thinking behind it was that since Josh wasn't here last week for QIO, that for the first 8 minutes of this episode,
it's just me talking to something.
With just murmurs of me and Daniel.
It's me having a seance. I'm talking to ghosts.
What are we going to do? We got to fix that.
No, Daniel, there's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. It's just going to be us quiet. It's just going to be us quiet, and I think that's okay, because you're a white guy.
We're just trying to silence the voices of the stream.
Just let it go. You were talking about Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah.
So he released an album on Good Friday.
It's called Damn.
Well, first off, he released the single 2 weeks ago, and he was like, on April 7th, you guys better get your shit together. And then April 7th came, and that was the pre-release. It was basically the release date for the release date. And so then April 14th is the release date, which is Good Friday. But now there's theories on the internet that much like Jesus died and rose from the dead, Kendrick Lamar, his album that came out on Good Friday, is going to be one album, and then there's going to be a second album on Easter Sunday.
That'd be crazy.
Yeah, and they're like convinced they're saying it's happening.
They're saying it's called Nation.
Yeah, which would mean, so damn Nation. Huh. Yeah, and there's a lot of thinking that it's going to be, because of the fact, like, To Pimp a Butterfly and Good Kid, Mad City were, like, so heavily political, and that damn really wasn't. I mean, it's good, and there's good music on it, but it...
Humble is awesome.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same depth that, like, Kendrick has, and of course, like, NPR is like, this is his best work of all time, and it's like, well, you're a bunch of white people, so of course you don't actually know anything. Like, but Complex is like, this isn't right. We're a little sus about, like, this Sunday
thing.
Wouldn't
it be funny if, like, it was just, like, only an okay album and everyone's like, just wait for Sunday.
Yeah.
Or what if it was Sunday came out and it was just a duets album with Katy Perry?
Yeah.
but, like, standards. Like...
like it was just, Maybe It's Cold Outside.
Maybe It's Cold Outside.
Just on repeat.
Yeah,
on repeat.
I was 11 say, like, tracks four, of Baby like It's Cold 40 Outside. 40 minutes of Baby It's Cold Outside.
Yeah. Kendrick Lamar is a great album artist, but that Baby It's Cold Outside album, was he thinking?
It was called Nation.
Yeah.
Why was it called Nation? Yeah. Why didn't they just call it Duets?
Duet.
Or Baby.
One
It's Cold Outside.
No, it's damn baby. Maybe it's cold outside.
Oh my god! So our punchiness actually brings me to what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah,
and that is overexertion.
Oh yeah.
I think that there's been a couple think pieces floating around out there about how we live in a gig culture.
Yep.
And how it's like chic to be tired and all this shit.
Oh my god, I never realized how chic I was.
I know. I'm so trendy because I'm so damn tired.
I think it's amazing though, because I feel like it's rooted in such a like keen social observation in that, like, the upper class just wants us all to be overworked and underpaid. No. And so, like, we are overworked and underpaid, and we're all overworked and underpaid, and it's like, wow, it must be cool to be this way. And it's like, no, we're just getting fucked over.
Yes. So what I've noticed... So when I lived at home, I would spend a fair amount of time with my mom and her friends, and a common question my mom's friends would ask me was, so Maureen, how many jobs are you working now? Which there were times that I was like, that I was more than happy to be like, oh, it's 5 right now. And then explain to them like what all I was doing. But then there were other times where I felt like kind of like a zoo animal. Like, oh my God. Like,
look, how many jobs are you working?
Like, I felt like they were like throwing me... Like, I was, like, in the ape exhibit, and mm-hmm. they were like, wow, look at the artist with 5 jobs.
Yeah. How much work are you doing, and how little health care do you have?
Yeah. That's actually one of my favorite things to do at work, because I work in the cafe I work in is in a very affluent area, and my favorite thing to do is someone will compliment my glasses, and I have nice glasses, and, like, my favorite thing is a woman in yoga pants will ask me or will tell me, I love your glasses. And I'll say, thanks. I got them when I had health insurance. It's my favorite thing to do. I love doing that. No, but I think that, and actually this is a conversation that I had with one of the people who comes in very frequently, where he was extolling how important it is for people to travel, which of course it's important for people to travel. But at the same time, and he was like, so many people, you know, they just come home and they watch Netflix and they don't do anything. And that pushed my buttons. Cause I actually said something. I was cleaning up my station or something. And he was saying like, oh, so many people just go home and sit on Netflix all day and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, I go home and I watch Netflix. And that's because I'm constantly working. And despite the fact that I'm constantly working, I can't afford to travel. And if I stopped working to go travel, I wouldn't be able to pay rent. And so I work all the time. And when I'm not working, I'm recovering from work, which the easiest way to do that is by just like taking my mind off of things and watching Netflix. Mm-hmm. And it brought to mind just like how out of touch a portion of our population is.
Oh, God,
in that
yeah.
they don't understand how much of a privilege it is to like be rested.
Yes.
Like, you know, being well rested is
God
not...
forbid doing one job well.
Yeah.
Right, instead of having eight jobs.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Dude, sitting in a coffee shop on Tuesday at 2 o'clock p.m. probably.
No, it's like 9 a.m.
Still not working a 9 to 5. Gotta punch in that capitalist time card, am I right? Gotta do that. Daniel. We're not living in a communist nation. We just have an expected lifestyle for every human being.
Daniel is all piss and vinegar today.
Well, it's just like, I don't know, man. I don't know. I'm really tired.
I know.
But, yeah. But we do have an expected lifestyle that people literally go into debt to maintain because yeah. we're all just temporarily poor. We're not, you know, we're all upper middle class. We're just temporarily poor. Yeah. And it's insane. And everyone does it. I mean, myself included. I just ordered like a fucking fancy phone, you know, but yeah. I have no money.
I just ordered clothes that, like...
What's clothes shopping like? I don't remember.
I know. This is the first time I've gone clothes shopping since, like, January.
Yeah.
And it's gotten to the point that, like, most of my shirts have holes. And it's like, yeah, I'd love to get new stuff, but, like,
And then you'll say that, and then someone will go, well, that's why you're interested in making an investment and buy more expensive clothing, because it'll last you longer. And you're like, how am I going to do that? Because people do that shit all the time, right?
Yeah.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that reminds me of the phone thing, where mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. The other side of not having a phone was, like, transit and using public transit yeah. without a phone. Because you don't have, like all of the transit apps or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So I can imagine being, like, low income and genuinely not being able to afford a phone. And then on top of that, not being able to afford a car. And so you have to take public transit all the time.
Yes.
Is that... Sorry, Moody... Was that
the... No, I have a cat rubbing against my leg, so I got very distracted because it's lovely.
Yeah. Moody, this morning, did me a solid.
Yeah.
She... before I woke up, I didn't have to take a shower because she came up and she washed my hair for me. He was just licking, I was thinking, I'm good.
Yeah. I was wondering this the other day. Now, go with me on this, guys. You have multiple cats, so you all might think about this. Mm-hmm. Do you think cats are ever offended that we don't lick them?
I don't know. Well, the way I see it is that... Well, let's see. Come here.
Are you going to lick the cat on air right now?
I'm not going to lick the cat. Hey, baby.
Oh, she's so cute.
I mean... Do you think that Moody is offended that Oscar doesn't lick her?
I don't know, because other... She might be. They do not have the best relationship.
No, they don't.
It's
really
getting
don't.
Better.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
But, you know, other dogs... Like, I've seen dogs and cats that are friends lick each other. I don't know. It's a thing.
I don't know.
I wonder about that. But I guess they also maybe know that we're not cats and don't do that. I don't know.
I don't know.
And we also, I guess I don't bite them either and scratch them. Guys, I'm covered in cat scratches right now, which is why I'm bringing this up. My arm is, it's a disaster area, quite frankly.
It's a double standard. We should be able to scratch.
We should be able to scratch cats. Mm-hmm. Jesus.
It's a sick double standard. No, actually, one of the reasons that I brought up the, like, this gig culture thing is that I saw a tweet from our dear friend Catherine Duffy, who, like, Catherine, I'm going to read your tweet on air, and I don't care. She said today, or no, a couple days ago, worked shift number one, 5:15 to 9:45 a.m., signed up for audition at 10, didn't get seen until 4:45, shift number two, 5 p.m. to 9:15 p.m.
Oh, God.
I also literally felt lazy today. Now, Catherine is a beacon of beautiful light, and she is she's a performer in the city, and she that girl hustles. And so her like work situation is very similar to mine in that I do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and so does she. Like, she works at SoulCycle and she nannies, and
okay.
And I, you know, am working at this coffee shop, and I have a church job, and hope to eventually see some income from this thing. But yeah, I don't know. It just like struck me as like I could, what are you doing? I could so relate to just that life of like, yeah, working, because that's pretty much what I did today. I worked from 7 a.m. until 2:30. And then I work again tonight from 6:15 until 10:45. Mm-hmm. And then I work again tomorrow morning from 8:30 until noon. And
God.
Then I have Sunday afternoon until Monday afternoon off. And then I have off on Tuesday. I work super early on Wednesday. I work all day Thursday, off on Friday, and then Saturday. And then it's an endless cycle. So, like, I totally... Like, I'm right there with you, and I saw this tweet of, like, I also literally felt lazy today. I'm like, yeah, like, on Monday, I'm not doing anything except for working for 6 hours.
And I'm, what a lazy day.
I know, exactly. And I'm like, wow, I can't believe I'm only working for 6 hours. It's so weird.
I do feel that way on a day when I'm temped all day, when I've worked, like, a full day, including 2 hours of commuting, and I come home and have nothing to do, I'm like... Wow, what a light day.
I know. Well, and it's horrible because what it does is it puts so much strain and it puts so much pressure on our free time, which like the whole model of the 40-hour week was to have free time built in.
Yes.
It's like a basic human right, basically, to like, you know, the expectation that working 40 hours in a week should sustain you completely, and oftentimes it doesn't. And the fact that we have to go above and beyond that, like, for months and months I was working 55 hours a week and still not making ends meet.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that too is a common story.
Oh, that's so common.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I wish we had listener mail or something, because I feel like this is just kind of like the I'm tired episode.
It is.
Can we talk about the United Airlines thing?
Yeah.
Sure.
That was terrible.
Yeah.
Good. Let's move on. No.
No, did you see that somebody also got stung by a scorpion on a United Airlines?
Scorpion.
Yes.
A scorpion on a United Airlines flight?
United like, Airlines, they're fucking
what a
up.
Mess. Like,
what is happening?
But what's... Oh, so... I don't know if everyone read this, because I just saw... So, you know, so they kicked this doctor off the flight, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the media was like, well, you know, he did have a drug history. He didn't. He didn't have a drug history. Someone else with a similar name did. And it wouldn't matter either way, quite, right. You know?
Wrong and racist.
Yeah. So, like, that blew my mind. The media's capacity to do that. Anytime anyone, like, if like a stand-up citizen, something bad happens to them, they'll go, well, you know, they had parking tickets.
He was no angel.
Yeah, he was no angel.
Just like those black kids deserve to get shot by the police. Didn't you know they did weed once?
They did, right.
They've
used a marijuana once, so they, you know, fell in with the wrong crowd. The media, really fucking... The 24-hour news cycle is so... dangerous, because it just encourages mediocrity.
Yeah.
Well, and also, I mean, this is what we talked about last week, but I'd glad if we're talking about the 24-hour news cycle,
yeah,
about how centrist Democrats are now like lauding Trump for Syria, although I'm not sure that they're lauding him anymore after the
the Moab.
Although, to be...
In Afghanistan.
I can't believe I'm saying this. To be fair, the that bomb was okayed by Obama for that purpose.
Moab?
And yes.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yes.
He's and of course, doing that's basically not... the centrist Democrat foreign policy right now.
Which is not a foreign policy I happen to agree with. I had problems with Obama's, and I had problems... And quite frankly, I do think that... hate saying this, but I think Hillary probably would have done the same thing, right?
Oh, she totally would.
She totally would. She said she would have.
So, that's...
But what's troubling to me is that, you know, Hillary would have done the same thing, and I would have disagreed with her.
Oh, me too.
But the other humanitarian things and social...
I know.
Yeah, I mean...
This doesn't erase the rest of... Of course.
But that's the thing, is that I feel like the 24-hour news cycle is working to try to erase the other atrocities that Trump has done. Because, and I said this last week, and I'll say it until I die, the day after the Syria bombing, he moved to...
defund federal funding to cut heating
assistance for low-income families.
Oh, also, I saw that, oh God, there is one of the companies that makes missiles with the bombs that he, like...
Has Raytheon. Stock in it.
Yeah, so he's, like, literally making money off of bombing people.
Yeah.
I mean, oh God. It just, here's the military-industrial complex. Here, it's right here. It's in front of you.
Apparently, the Moab had, like, a 2-mile blast radius.
Yeah.
And anyone within that radius is now permanently deaf.
Good. Really? Great. I saw something. So, this was an interesting line of thinking that I kind of got down with. I saw something pop up from Facebook about, just about our kind of interventionist history, right? Where some, how would we feel if people bombed us? Because of, say, the atrocities committed against
Flint
and also what we did to the Native Americans with the pipeline, you know, the gassing, them, whatever, and the lack of... Because those are pretty much, like, those are huge crimes that we're committing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what would we think if someone took it up... Let's say, I don't know, let's say Germany, for fuck's sake, right? Because Angela Merkel seems like the same person. Let's say, what if she was like, well, you know, they're awful, so let's bomb them. Because that's kind of what we're doing, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Syria, especially. I mean, the Moab wasn't there. But, you know, that's our... It's just an interesting way to think about things.
Yeah, or if we, like, have been laying siege to the Middle East for decades, and so then they finally pulled together a ragtag group of people to hijack planes and bomb towers. How would we react to that? Oh, right, with 15 more years of war.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm no 9/11 conspiracy theorist.
Nope.
I'm not sitting here saying that JFK did it, but like
JFK.
But like you can't sit here and not recognize that some reactions are measured.
And it's important to talk about, and it's not something that we do talk about. We're like, well, these repercussions are just because terrorism and because Muslims or something. You know, that's what we do. But it's so much more complex than that. And of course, it's not that we're. Sitting here saying, well, we deserved it. Because no, but you can't turn a blind eye to the fact that we did do things that would instigate this kind of behavior and are continuing to do that.
And then you have the double-sided nature of the war we're fighting right now, where we're fighting faceless, nameless international groups like ISIS and like Al-Qaeda, right? Where these organizations aren't a nation state. So.
No.
What we've been doing, at least with the Obama presidency, is just bombing random places that we think might have, like, a leader of ISIS there. And what that's looked like is hundreds of civilians dead. Innocent civilians. And, like, that's something that no one wants to talk about. And everyone's willing to talk about how terrible Syria was. And it was terrible. But, like, we've been bombing the shit out of Syria. We're just now bombing the Syrian
state.
Also,
we have no right. Hear me out on the Syria thing. Because we're like, oh my God, we have to... He's committing like war crimes against his people. This is a nightmare. But at the same time, we will not let them come to our country, right? We have no right to claim that we're doing some heroic thing by trying to take, you know, bomb Syria. We're just making lives worse for the people who we refuse to help in any other way because we like bombing things. and showing her giant bomb penis. Like, you know?
And then that now we're, like, entering into this fucking North Korea game. Which is like, this is not a card game we should be playing.
Especially when
the ace card are fucking nukes. Yeah.
That's what's so troubling to me is, like, never have I been more aware of nuclear weapons.
Yeah, and that's not a feeling I like having. I remember thinking about them a lot, you know, so being in New York during 9/11 in those days, that's when all of a sudden the realities of war kind of hit me. I was like, well, this is like, this could be a regular event, you know, in some ways, and there could be bombs, and I live in New York, and this is scary. And,
yeah.
But then, you know, the years kind of went by, and I stopped thinking about that so much. Now, all of a sudden, for the first time since then, I'm like, well, shit. Who could it come from? Any one of these people.
Oh, yeah. That's what I think is so devastating, is like, it could be literally anybody. It could be literally anybody.
Well, I'm always interested in the thought of what these attacks actually end up looking like proportionally to a city. Like, and I'm going to draw a comparison to, like, Israel-Palestine right now, because that's something I've always kind of thought was a weird thing, that we think that Israel and Palestine is, like, an even war when, like, the, Palestine is shooting, like, handmade rockets rock rockets or something that, like
rock projectiles.
Maybe they get one Israeli a year. Whereas, like, Israel, hundreds of Palestinians are dead. And the comparison I want to draw to that with, like, the 9/11 conversation is, of course, 9/11 was terrible. Of course. But, like, we dropped a nuke on someone. Do you know what would have happened if someone had dropped a nuke on New York City?
Oh, my God.
Like it would be insanely terrible. Because what's the radius of Manhattan?
Right. I mean, it's not huge, honestly.
They'd take out half of Manhattan. It's like 4 or 5 million people.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the thing for me is, like, when you get into this.
Well, and not only that, but New York is like our financial center. So not only would it kill 4 or 5 million people, but it would also, like, just, it would, our economy would collapse.
Yes. Yes.
So I don't think that what our president and what our government is currently not taking into account is we're writing a check we're not willing to cash, you know.
These, like, things are not equal. The false equivalency of a bomb of a plane going into a building and a nuclear bomb is mm-hmm. is wrong to me. And don't get me wrong, neither is, like, okay. I'm not sitting here.
No, of course
but
not.
Yeah.
No,
yeah. But we can't, this false equivalency bullshit, it just ends up being a thing of, like, well, you know, like what you said earlier, it's just, well, we've got the nuclear dick. We've got the big guy that we're going to kill millions of people with. And it's just, it's really terrible.
Well, and it's also a thought of, like, this idea of American lives being more important than lives elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that the thought of 200 people in America dying in some horrible accident versus, like, not even 50 people dying in a U.S. accident versus, like, 300 people in Turkey dying in a night.
Yeah.
Is, like, you know, 50 people die in America and it's a national tragedy. You know, it's like, for example, today is the anniversary of the Boston Marathon bombing.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Today is that the 4-year anniversary. How many people died?
I don't remember.
I'll look it up.
Okay.
While
yeah.
Talking.
Yeah. So, I mean, not many people died.
No, the number was relative.
Yeah. Relative many ones. People were injured, but not many people died.
Well, and I think,
and don't, but what's, but you know, that is something that is going to be told over and over again. Three people died in the Boston Marathon.
Injured
264, which is horrible.
Yeah.
And that is an event that is going to be part of our history forever.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Three people dying and 264 people being injured. We don't even, I can't even, and like, I'm not claiming to be, like, a beautiful angel of remembering every horrible atrocity that's ever happened elsewhere, but, like, there are, like, that's a day in the life, some places, of, like, a bomb going off and three people like dying. Syria. For example. And, like...
And also, you know, we never even talk, like, as a country, we do not have national conversations about kind of the atrocities happening in, I can't say atrocities today, atrocities happening in South America. We do not talk about, like, the Venezuelan government that is a nightmare, you know?
But we will assassinate their world leaders and put in our own officials.
Yes, but...
That
but
end up being authoritarian and terrible.
And it's so clear that we think the national conversations about our interventionist policies only really apply to the Middle East. And clearly there's some reasons for that, despite similar conditions that could be happening for people, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of insane, and it just shows that our motives are different than what we are claiming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, and I think that something, you know, in terms of three people sitting in a one-bedroom apartment right now, you know, I think that these are not new conversations. You know, it's not like we're the first people.
Oh, God, no. No, of course not.
At all. But I think that, consider, you know, we are an arts podcast. Yeah. I've started calling it an arts and social justice podcast.
That's fair.
Because I think that that's accurate. But I think that there's a tendency among artists to be kind of like to have tunnel vision. And to not consider, like, historical context for certain things. And so I think that it's important for artists to be having this conversation. It's very important. And to be having these conversations. And I know that that's something that you brought up, is, like,
yes,
artists forgetting historical context, even within art.
Because art is... It's so important to... not to make a hard turn here, but it's so important to talk about when and why art was made. Because... we can't view everything under today's lens, right? Otherwise, you'd never understand the importance of Stravinsky, because that music is relatively tame by some of today's standards. Right. But when the Rite of Spring came out, you know.
There were riots.
There were riots. And I had this big rant on Facebook yesterday because of people talking. There's the, I'm sure many of you are seeing this out there on Facebook, but people are listing, like, musical I love, musical I hate, musical I think is overrated, whatever. I mean, I know that my Facebook feed is particularly full of musical theater actors and love, so I'm inundated with it. But a lot of people were talking about how they think Rent is overrated. Now, I remember when Rent opened on Broadway, I lived in New York, and I saw it not a couple years after that, just because I was so young when it came out. I was only like 10. Yeah, because it came out in 96 on Broadway. Mm-hmm. I probably saw it when I was 13 or something. I saw it 3 times on Broadway. And it had a great impact. Yeah. Well, it had a great impact on me then. And then, of course, we all became inundated with Rent. They made a mediocre movie of it. And
yeah.
It was on Broadway for longer than it probably should have been, which always kills any love anyone has for anything. And so now all these people are like, oh, I think Rent's overrated. Oh, Rent. Why did anyone ever like Rent? Rent, Rent. But... Rent was revolutionary. First of all, I don't think we would have Hamilton if Rent were not a thing. Also, it is one of the only musicals, still to this day, that really portrayed homosexuals as people, not accessories. And I don't want to discount things that came up before, like Le Cachafo or things like that, which did well, or Will Finn musicals, which aren't as historically successful as Rent was. So Rent had homosexual characters, talked about AIDS. During the AIDS crisis, when people were not talking about AIDS, during the 80s and 90s, during this post-fucking-Reagan-fucking-fucking-fucking-it-up for everyone, you know? And the man made a musical about it, and it talked about it and became part of the national conversation. Yeah, so, you know, you can say, oh, I think Rent is overrated, but what are you doing if you're not thinking about...
Well, and I think that something else that Rent did that I think... is often overlooked, is like the number Contact. Like, it was on stage, like,
portraying
homosexuals having sex on stage.
On stage.
Granted, it was under a sheet.
Yes.
But I mean, it was gay people having sex in front of aunts, uncles, cousins, grandmas, school
and
trips.
Also, it was a widely diverse cast.
Absolutely.
I mean, which is also important, which also doesn't necessarily happen as much as it should on Broadway even today. So, Now, I don't think that because of this historical context, you have to go, oh, you're right, this is the best musical ever. You don't have to change your artistic opinion, and because I have 1,000 artistic opinions about everything. Yeah. And no, you don't have to like it, but I think you do have to reevaluate the way you think about it and go, well, maybe I'm being too hard on it because it really did change things and it was important at the time. That doesn't mean you have to go listen to it right now.
Exactly. And I think that within the confines of the weird social media thing that's going on of like,
yeah,
musicals I love, musicals I hate, musicals, you know, I think that if you hate that musical for its music, I think that's fine.
Mm-hmm. I think of course it's fine.
I think you can dislike it, but to call it overrated is wrong.
Yeah. I agree. I also, there was another thread in some fucking classical singer thread somewhere. Okay. Well, I think you saw this one because I thought you commented on it too.
I usually, yes.
And I saw it, and they were talking about how we're really missing out on like what Hamilton's leak. Like,
oh yeah, I commented on that today. Because
like, it's there isn't the same American opera tradition. And for me, it's interesting because I feel like for me, Hamilton, I mean, I'm not a huge fan. I haven't listened to Hamilton.
You were about to say that you like Hamilton,
but I tried to get you
to listen to Hamilton a couple times.
I gotta be honest,
I'm not a big fan of like really white sounding hip hop. Not that obviously it's all people of color,
it's written by a lad, man.
Does that make sense? Was that a terrible thing I just said?
There's only one white person in that entire cast.
I'm talking about the sound of it.
I think what you're saying is it feels like it's kind of like an academic version of hip hop. How about that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I, like, oh God, I feel like I just entered a minefield that I did not want to get into.
Yes, we are here now.
I suggest backing up.
So, all right. So here's what I'm really trying to get at here is, I think that. The thing that's interesting to me about Hamilton is I feel like in 100 years, it's going to be classified like alongside opera. And so I personally feel like a lot of the classical music tradition and the musical theater tradition actually have more in common than not. And I always kind of get it whenever people get into this conversation of like, well, like musical theater isn't really as academic or legitimate as opera is, and so it doesn't really count. So like when we're looking at opera, we really shouldn't look at musical theater. It's like, you cannot like musical theater, fine, like you cannot like the style, but you can't not deny that they are as culturally significant. And what are you trying to say that opera is that musical theater isn't? And so I think Hamilton has all of those things. And I would almost say that to me, and obviously this is a white person saying this, so I'm going to preface that again with that. To me, Hamilton is more elitist than like the new Kendrick Lamar album or the most hip hop actually being made right now.
Well, I'll say one of the things that's important about Hamilton is it's presenting something to people who can finally see themselves represented. Representation. Hamilton is important because of representation. I mean, that's not the only reason it's important, but that is a reason that's important. And I will say this 1,000, I will yell this from the mountaintops. Our idea of representation in opera is, let's send this white lady to sing Tosca in an underprivileged Latin neighborhood, and then we'll give them opera. That's not how you do it. And that's what, until we get, stop being so out of touch as a community. But I mean, and I say that then with the caveat that everything you said is correct, because opera and musical theater are pretty much the same thing, except for maybe the styles of singing have diverged. Well, and that is important to note because we all spent a lot of time learning how to sing in that style.
Exactly.
So that means
it's like the difference between the same thing for musical theater.
Yes, and the same thing because they spend as much time. Absolutely. It's a very hard, they're both very different in that way and hard, but at the end of the day, the end effect of the art form is very similar.
Absolutely. The differences to me are the differences between Baroque or Bel Canto or like Gesangskunstwerk, where it's like all the same fucking, like it's.
And those differences exist within musical theater itself because absolutely. Then you're not going to sing Hamilton the way you sing Oklahoma.
No.
Just the way you're not going to sing Papaya the way you sing La Boheme. You know, it's just not the same thing.
But what's really the difference between, like, street scene and, like, Carousel?
When you get into the American, let's say the mid-20th century American opera tradition, there isn't.
No.
It is the same. It is, and that's when people like Sondheim has said, well, when Sweeney Todd's on Broadway, it's a musical. When it's in an opera house, it's an opera. And I would agree with that. And I think the same goes for Porgy and Bess. And I think the same goes for Street Scene. Minotti operas opened on Broadway. The Saint or Bleecker Street was on Broadway, but it's an opera, you know, but it was on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Operettas were on Broadway.
Yeah.
I don't know. We got very strange, and within our community, we're very strange about those categorizations.
Well, and the thing is, like, the only thing that seems to really categorize American opera now is like it not being popular.
Yeah.
Which is so fucking stupid to me, because it's like, I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily think that we need to, as American musicology, like American, not musicology, but like defining of opera shit, need to go through all of this musical theater and go like, well, that's ours now. Like, this is opera, really.
No, but I will tell you what, and the main difference right now is that opera houses are like museums. They present things that are old and done and known commodities. On Broadway, they do revivals, and there's a lot of them, but they do new things. That's where new things happen. Until the A-level house is an opera, until the Met in Chicago, they'll throw a bone, right? They'll do like one new opera every 10 years. They'll be like, oh, we got a new opera, but we're only going to do it this once, and you're never going to see it again. Mm-hmm. But then we're going to do Carmen again. And that happens everywhere.
Yeah.
And until opera houses stop doing that, I don't really think we, not that we don't have a chance, but as far as seeing it on that grand scale, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On that scale. It happens in the smaller companies.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it is Easter Vigil Saturday, and we've got to wrap it up. But
because we have to be there at 6 for some reason?
We have to get there at 6:15, and I have to shower.
I'm going to go home and take my pants off.
And it's 5:30. But we would obviously love to continue this conversation. If any of you have any thoughts about this, please write in to scopymag@gmail.com. We've found that that episodes where we have listener mail have had a little bit more direction, although I think that we landed.
You guys got me talking about a thing I could talk about for a long time.
Exactly. So I think that, but if there are specific things that you want us to talk about, please let us know. Write in with questions, write in with concerns, send us articles. I love it when people send us articles.
Yeah.
Articles. Like, it broadens my horizons immensely. Like, I think it's so, so cool. So please keep doing that. Yeah. So,
I also want to say that I am definitely not a person that thinks that Hamilton is underrated. Yeah. I mean, overrated. What am I saying? I recognize deeply that there is an extreme value of cultural
representation. You do not believe that it is overrated. That's it is not overrated at all. No.
Yeah.
No, it is worth the hype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just wasn't a big fan of 90s hip hop. That's all. Anyway.
That's fine. That's where its influences come from. That's fine.
Yeah. Thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
Joshua Smith is a bunch of writhing spiders under a tarp.
Nailed it. If you want to keep up with what we are up to, there are so many ways you can do that. You can head over to scopymag.com. We've got articles there. You can see a list of episodes there. I think we're also going to upload all of our Scopy Studios on there at some point, so keep an eye out for that. If you want to keep up with us on social media, you can do that on Facebook under Scopy Magazine. We just released the video for our most recent Scopy Studio.
Which is awesome.
It's so good. It came out really nice. Good. We're really happy with it. So please check that out. We found out today that the Facebook algorithm buries everything.
So like everything.
We've been experimenting with promotion of post shit. And I think because of that, it's buried everything. So if you have some time, do us a solid and just go like everything so that our posts actually show up in your feed. Because I think we fucked up. Forgive us. Anyway. Otherwise, we are on Instagram and Twitter at @ScopyMag.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. We run on a shoestring budget. I can no longer say zero budget because we sponsor our posts. So we run on a shoestring budget. We would love to expand our reach. We'd love to produce more Scopy Studios. But we can't do that without your help. So if you head to scopymag.com, go to our About section, or anywhere, quite frankly, hit that donate button for as little as $5 a month. That's less than a Netflix subscription. So just help us out. And if you become a monthly subscriber, we will give you a shout out on the show and figure out some other incentives, which, damn it, we should actually do. I mean, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
If you do a one-time donation, we will send you a handwritten thank you note, which we will actually do because we have stamps.
Yeah!
Yeah! Give a little, give a lot. And if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Great. Thank you all so much for listening again. I've go out and make something.
I gotta go shower. Bye!